Hello and welcome to Neuroplasticity Nerds. My name is Jessica Maguire, and today's episode is about understanding bottom-up and top-down processing and is really looking at the brain-body connection. So as a physiotherapist, I helped people with their bodies, mobilizing joints, strengthening muscles, working on their posture. And that was a big part of the work that I did. But I also worked with patients who had experienced things like traumatic brain injuries or suffered a stroke. And I saw firsthand how it's possible to change the brain or that it's plastic. It's something we refer to as neuroplasticity. And over the last several years, I've seen the autonomic nervous system, which has to do with our sense of survival, and how it's the bridge between the brain and body, and how we can also change this to overcome things like anxiety, shutdown, and hopelessness that can follow periods of traumatic stress. For such a long time, we've really thought of the brain and the body as being two separate things. And we often think of the brain as being the command center that's in charge of what's happening in our body, and that if we think differently, we can feel better. Yet over the last decade in particular, the science has shown that that's not necessarily the case. And we know from research on things like the gut-brain axis that the digestive system really communicates with the brain, and this can make a difference in our mood, our concentration, and our emotions. We also know that 80% of the vagus nerve's fibers are running from the body up to the brain, and they're influencing our cognition, concentration, and our mood. Our society so often sends this message that how we're feeling is all a choice. We just need to change how we're viewing the world and we'll be okay. If we want to be trauma-informed, though, in our organizations, institutions, and in our communities at large, then there needs to be a paradigm shift that goes beyond mindset work or simply encouraging people to be more positive when going through difficult events. What we classify as traumatic or not traumatic isn't necessarily about how the thinking brain judges or labels an event. It's really about how the survival brain interprets that, particularly if we feel helpless or like we lack agency. And that has a profound effect on our nervous system. It's really the ongoing dysregulation that can persist in the nervous system that has us swinging up to the highs of anxiety and down to the lows of shutdown that's really the most important part. And this can continue to play on for months and years after a traumatic event has ended. When we're dysregulated, mindset strategies will usually fall flat. And today I'm going to dive into the neurobiology behind all of this. It's really important that we understand that, because shame can arise if we're sending a message or we're receiving a message that if we can't overcome dysregulation using mindset work or changing how we look at things or being more positive, then there's something wrong with us. But once we understand the neurobiology, we can see how that's actually really hard to do. After periods of chronic and traumatic stress, our brain and autonomic nervous system can become overprotective to cues of threat because of what they learnt in that time. This threat detection process is what we call neuroception. And this is how neural circuits decide if people, places, and situations make us feel safe, dangerous, or if we see them as life-threatening. And this process of neuroception happens outside of conscious awareness. So the two-way communication between our brain and body, we can think of as our brain-body system, and it's really integral to how we cope with and recover from stress. And we're going to focus on the brain-body system, looking at both bottom-up, or from the body up to the brain, and top-down, from the brain down to the body and how that impacts our physiology. So one of the most common questions we get in the program is, what is a bottom-up approach? And so many of the students that come into our program know that nervous system work is often the missing piece of the puzzle for themselves or for the clients that they're helping. And so this is really important for us to understand, because when we talk about the bottom-up approach, we're talking about how we influence the parts of the brain located towards the base, which we can collectively call the survival brain. So this includes the brainstem, the cerebellum, and the limbic system. And one of the most important regions here is what we call the amygdala, because it plays such a key role in neuroception, or determining if a situation is safe, dangerous, or life-threatening. Now, from that assessment, we will move into different states of our nervous system. So if this assessment, which is below the level of conscious awareness, is that we're safe, then we will move towards ventral vagal regulation, where our heart slows down, our digestive system moves to function more optimally, we might feel a sense of relief in our body. If that appraisal is that there's danger, we'll first move in to the sympathetic or the hyperarousal state, where our energy mobilizes. If we can't deal with the stressor using our sympathetic nervous system, then we can move into the dorsal vagal shutdown state, where our energy is immobilized. So it's really this assessment that determines the state of our nervous system we find ourselves in. Now, the survival brain communicates with us in a specific way, and this is the language that we need to learn to speak. But for many of us, it's not something that we may have learned before. It communicates with us by releasing neurotransmitters and hormones, and also through activation of our nervous system, so that we feel strong sensations and emotions in our body. And they're trying to get our attention. So it could be the gripping in our chest. It could be a gut-wrenching tightness or a hollow ache of shame in our belly. And this is why mindset strategies can often fall flat. It's the survival brain that creates the nervous system activation that shifts us into these different states that causes dysregulation. The survival brain is also involved in the implicit memory system. So if you think back to the first time you rode your bike without training wheels, you might see yourself there with a parent or maybe a sibling, and you can see your bike. And that's an explicit memory where you recall that from your past. An implicit memory in this case would be that your body knows how to ride a bike without having to think it through. You don't necessarily need to bring it into your conscious awareness. And this is how survival strategies are learned. So for instance, if we've gone through an event that was highly stressful, but we felt like we could take action and we didn't lack agency, the implicit memory that gets stored is one that's around empowerment and agency, and that we can take action. However, if there's a time where we are experiencing high levels of stress and we can't take action, or we feel like we're helpless, the implicit memory that gets stored means that we're more likely to respond with helplessness and move into shutdown or freeze. And in the face of a traumatic event, we're most likely to experience shutdown, dissociation, and freeze. And these are the states that are often most poorly understood. We hear a lot about anxiety and working with fight or flight, but working with shutdown is something that we don't hear about as much. So our survival brain is involved in fast thinking. It prioritizes efficiency over accuracy. So what that means is that sometimes it doesn't take context into consideration, but if something feels similar to our past, it will respond and we might find ourselves in that similar state. In terms of development, the survival brain develops first. And if you think about babies, we communicate with them through our sensory systems. So we use co-regulation, through touch, warm touch, to hold them and let them know they're safe. We might soothe them by rocking them and also through the cooing of our voice, which is part of our social engagement system. So when our voice has prosody and changes in rhythm and pitch, this can help to shift our babies towards regulation. They are not able to self-regulate. They completely rely on co-regulation. And this is what leads to their neurobiology developing, especially in the key areas of attachment and later on self-regulation. And this sensory information even plays a role in myelinating the vagus nerve, particularly the branch that helps us come back to regulation. And through that myelination process, it means the vagus nerve then acts with more accuracy and more speed, so that we are responding to what's happening in our environment with the correct level of activation in our nervous system. But in times of traumatic stress or following a brain injury, the brain may regress back more to that primitive state or to the survival brain. And this is where we need to come and work with our sensory systems again and use what we call a bottom-up approach, where we tap into the sensory information from the body to shift the way that the survival brain is responding. So, ways that this can play out is that we work with the way that the body is holding itself in postures, not postures as in stand up straight, but as in holding tension or the gestures that it makes, but also the internal sensations of our body's organs. And the bottom-up approach accepts that body sensations are what happens first. Now, the thinking brain, on the other hand, communicates with us through cognition, beliefs, narrative, and our language. And we know, thanks to the placebo effect, how our thoughts and beliefs can impact our physiology. So we know that by taking a sugar pill, we may have an improvement in our immune system, we may experience less fatigue, we may be less anxious and experience less pain. And that's simply through a belief. So the thinking brain is involved with that explicit memory that we talked about before, like seeing ourselves in a particular situation. And it's also involved in slower, big picture thinking. And when we talk about a top-down approach, this means we're starting with the top parts of the brain that are associated with thinking. And these include the neocortex, the frontal lobes, and the prefrontal lobes. So why do things like mindset strategies fall flat when we're dysregulated? Using something like mindset strategies is using top-down regulation, but in this case, more top-down control. And, you know, if we are more resourced, this can actually be helpful to look at our thoughts and beliefs and language because we know they impact our physiology. But when we're experiencing traumatic stress, there are limitations. So when we're either following a traumatic event or we're triggered or we're feeling really anxious, focusing on what we're thinking and trying to reframe thoughts doesn't always help us. And that's because we're focusing on the higher centers of the brain, which we actually know tend to go offline when we're experiencing high levels of stress. So research has shown that in times of dysregulation, there will be less blood flow to the areas in the thinking brain, and there'll be increased blood flow and activity in the survival brain. So trauma diverts energy to the more primal parts of your brain that developed first. And for those without a trauma history or that don't first mobilize a fight, flight, freeze response, we can look at those top-down strategies and they can work well. But if we've been experiencing traumatic stress or if we are dysregulated, thinking as an initial intervention can't override the response from the survival brain and our nervous system. The body's memory of danger gets supercharged by the amygdala. And this is particularly important if an implicit memory has been triggered. So those implicit memories that we have are stored via the amygdala, and that stores the emotional experience. And normally the hippocampus, which is another important region in the brain, will play a role in storing memories so they become explicit, or we can think back and remember them. But when we're experiencing traumatic stress, we know that the hippocampus actually can shut down. And this is a little bit like when we drink too much alcohol and we can't remember what's happened the night before. We lose big chunks of time of what's actually been going on. Well, under traumatic stress, we might not actually recall fully what's happened when something traumatic went on, but those implicit memories get stored. And when something comes up again that feels similar in sensation, it can trigger us to respond in the same nervous system activation patterns that we responded with at the time. We also know that when we're experiencing high levels of activation in the amygdala, we lose access to the Broca's area, which is one of the primary language centers located on the left side of the brain. And it plays a really important role in taking what we feel and expressing it with words. So if the Broca's area has gone offline, talking about our stressful events can actually make us more prone to dissociating from the body and moving into shutdown. Focusing on thinking and trying to reframe thoughts is a little bit like saying what happened to you doesn't really matter. Only changing your thoughts about it does. So pay no attention to how your body feels or the memories that are left living inside of it. Let's just think about it in a different way and everything will be okay. But we know that that's not necessarily going to change those explicit memories, and it's not going to change the way that we default into those different states. What we need to do is learn to change what's happening in the survival brain. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. So, should top-down strategies then be disregarded altogether? No. We want to learn to bring the thinking brain's top-down regulation back into a harmonious relationship with the survival brain. The mistake that's often made is that we try and use top-down strategies like mindset work or willpower, and we disregard or ignore what's happening in the body. And this is not really regulation. It's a form of control or management. So when we cut off from those powerful sensations and emotions in our body that the survival brain is eliciting to get our attention, it feels like it's being ignored. It's a little bit like a child who's crying and we ignore it. It's going to get louder and louder. Once we learn to bring our attention to these sensations and stay in the body, we can change the way that the information is being perceived by the survival brain. What we really want is an integration of bottom up and top down together, and that's what will help the window of tolerance expand, and we will come back into nervous system regulation. We'll bring the vagus nerve back online, and over time we'll actually be building vagal tone. So some of the most effective bottom up approaches include interoception. And this is learning how we read, understand, and interpret the internal cues of our body. Now, we want to do this in a trauma-informed way. So sometimes we need to build a little bit more capacity first, but in time, we can learn to use the bottom-up approach of interoception and combine it with top-down regulation as we focus on what's happening inside of our body. Those sensations are the foundation of our emotions. And once we can learn to see what those emotions are telling us, we can then take actions which proactively manage our nervous system. We can also use proprioception, so learning to recognize the way that we're holding our body as well. So this is really tapping into the sensory systems. So we want to learn to work with our sensory systems and at the same time keep those brain areas that we spoke about, like the Broca's area, also the insular cortex, and important regions in the frontal lobe. We want to keep those online as we process bodily sensations. And that's one way that we can learn to bring ourselves quickly back to regulation. Now, for our survival brain to process these implicit memories, we need to create a new experience in the heat of the moment. So often we're responding today to something that feels similar to the past, or that the survival brain has predicted is going to be the same, but that's not necessarily the case. So if in the heat of the moment, we can lean into these bottom-up strategies like co-regulation and our sensory systems, and we can show the survival brain that we now have agency, we're not helpless, and we can take action, then a new implicit memory gets laid down. And this is the process of transformation. But we can't do this simply through trying to change the way that we think about things or being more positive. We really need to come into the information that's being sent from the body up to the brain. We also know the importance of co-regulation here. So co-regulation is a bottom-up process that bypasses the thinking brain. We know that another person's social engagement system can help bring our own ventral vagal regulation back online. And that's through the tone of their voice, their listening, their gestures, and their facial expression. And these cues aren't necessarily going into cognition where we consciously say, oh, that person is talking to me in a voice that has got prosody. This is happening, as I said, outside of conscious awareness. So often we're seeing workplace trainings and professional development sessions being about mindset work. And it's not that this isn't necessarily helpful in some instances, particularly as we are more regulated. But if we want our organizations and our workplaces to be trauma-informed, we need to recognize that bottom-up approaches work too, and are often necessary for people who have been experiencing traumatic stress or having a difficult time. Our culture prioritizes these top-down strategies like willpower and mindset to change how we feel. And often that message about reframing our thoughts or how we talk about what's happened means that we'll be fine. And for many people who've been stuck in dysregulation for weeks, months, or even years, this is the missing piece of the puzzle for them. It's about learning to change the information that's being sent from the body up to the brain so that neuroception can be transformed. It's also about learning to change those implicit memories that create those powerful responses in the body and continue to loop around and around again. So this really can be the most powerful work for so many people. Behavior really does make sense when we look at it through the lens of the nervous system. And the world really needs more trauma-informed people. If interoception and the sensory systems is something that you'd love to learn more about, we have a free resource for you linked in the show notes. Thank you.
This podcast contains general information only. It is intended to educate and inform, but does not constitute medical, psychological, or any other professional advice or services. From time to time, we may discuss sensitive topics that deal with trauma and other lived experiences that may be distressing to some listeners. If you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health and you're in Australia, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. If someone's life is in danger, immediately call 000. The full podcast disclaimer is accessible via the show notes.